We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit MTE.com. MTE.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better
since 1936.
This is a WGNS Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
This morning, we are joined by nurse practitioner Hallie McNew. How are you this morning?
I am doing good.
And you're with St. Thomas Rutherford here in town. So talk a little bit about your background and what got you into the medical field.
Yeah, so I was born in Murfreesboro, local Mitchell Nelson, then Riverdale, back in the day when there was one middle school. So we all kind of know each other from then. And then I went to Tennessee Tech, marketing degree, and the weekend that I graduated, my dad had a massive heart attack.
So that's kind of what kicked it off right there.
Mm-hmm. It changed the trajectory of my degree. I mean, I was in business, I was an analyst for a local company, and then saw some nurses that really cared and decided that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, marketing and medical are quite different, aren't they?
You know, you do what you or your family is known to do, and that's all you really know, and then when your walls come down and your life expands a little bit, you see things that you've never been exposed to before.
What was it about that event? What happened?
Yeah, I mean, I was 22. My mom was an international flight attendant, so she actually was out of town. And you know these movies that flashes of things happen and you can pick up small details? Looking back as a 22-year-old, it was all very overwhelming, like stages of what was happening with him. And he had a massive heart attack. And so the ER doctors would come and let us know, you know, we're not sure how this is going to go. And very traumatic events that we've all probably experienced with different people in our lives that we care about. And I stayed in the ICU waiting room a lot, probably because I was uncomfortable being in the room or didn't want to be in the way. And I remember with the first night, one of the nurses said, "What does he go by?" And I said, "Gene, his name's Gene." And then as things go on, you come in and out of the ICU. And then 3 days later, she said, "Gene is doing so much better." And I thought, I can go home and take a shower. And the thing about somebody's name and a nurse that steps in as caretaker or advocate when they don't even know somebody really just told myself, like, that's what I want to do for other people. So went to nursing school and a newbie. I wasn't used to it at all. So went through that whole thing.
Now, if anybody out there listening has been to like one of those massive hospitals in Chicago, New York, somewhere like that, they don't call the patients by the first name. Mm-hmm. They don't have that extra attention. It's different when you're in a town, and I would say small town, but Murfreesboro's growing like crazy. Yeah. But it is different.
Yeah, I mean, this hospital might be at a different location, but it still has a CCU and a CVICU now with heart surgery, and it is getting bigger. But you know, I saw an ICU nurse that I work very closely with that are great taking care of our personal patients. And she always says, "Hey, he goes by this." I won't say the person's name, but, you know, and I had this conversation. I said, "Talk to me. I know that you always really try to figure out what they go by." And she said, "I try not to judge. Maybe the family is at work or maybe they have some difficult relationships." She said, "That's not my place, but I do know that they might wake up differently or respond differently by their first name."
February known as, I guess, Heart Health Month, and that's one of the focuses that a lot of people talk about this month, especially in the medical field. What are some of the things that you've learned over the years that stand out to you that you have seen with heart patients?
You know, there's some different classifications of heart patients, and I think it goes with personality type. Sometimes you might have the really driven male patient that is really good at his business and may not be that great at taking care of his body or going to the doctor equally as important as he takes care of his family. I think the first step is really just getting a primary care doctor and establishing some good routine. And then if you are feeling off for a long time, like fatigue or headache, which could be high blood pressure, or you can't get the weight off and you're starting to feel short of breath, these are like basic things that I hear a lot. it's really the progression of worsening symptoms. Oh, I'm always short of breath, but maybe the shortness of breath is 3 to 4 times the amount that they're used to. That's your body's warning sign for something might be wrong.
And when you say shortness of breath, you're talking about a very noticeable shortness of breath, right? It's not just like, well, I just ran a mile and I feel a little short of breath.
Yeah, it could be just, hey, I have to get up 5 steps to get into my house. And that now, which was not difficult, seems very difficult. And they have to pause, or they start to get sweaty, or they have to sit down. Some drastic things that interfere with your ability to do the day-to-day. Those are, for me, the big warning signs. There's typical warning signs for, let's say, a heart attack, which is chest pressure. Diabetes patients sometimes don't feel the chest pressure. And then women have atypical symptoms like shortness of breath or arm numbness or back pain. And I've even heard jaw pain or tooth pain. So women sometimes are underdiagnosed because they don't have the same symptoms. So it could be anything. I mean, I'm all about, if you don't have primary care, you can always go to the ER and just get checked out.
Now, in this day and age, it seems like more people than not are stressed out more so than they used to be. And we saw anxiety numbers go up during COVID, and those numbers, I guess, continue to be high for those who have anxiety, and maybe they didn't before. But how often do you see patients who come in and their symptoms may turn out to be something like an anxiety attack or just ongoing anxiety that does not stop versus it being an actual heart problem?
Yeah, I think there's really a bunch of myths that we come across. I'm too young to worry about heart disease. I'm not having a heart attack because I'm not having chest pain. Heart disease runs in my family, so there's nothing I can do about it. There's a lot of myths that we kind of have to undo. Anxiety is hard, right? So I think, let's say we have a 16-year-old that has anxiety and is breathing very heavily, but you know he or she has a test tomorrow. Those things fit into the category. But let's say we have a smoker that is 45 years old, that heart disease runs in their family, and their blood pressure is always high. That anxiety, coupled with maybe something else, shortness of breath, and maybe some numbness, would need to be checked out for sure.
And the numbness, where do people typically feel that?
Yeah, tingling across the chest that shoots down to the arm, or arm pain that goes down the right or left arm. Throat pain, epigastric pain. So that's a mimic acid reflex. Oh, it's my acid reflex. I took Tums. It didn't go away. These are all things that might warrant. We call those mimics. So chest pain could have a mimic of also acid reflex or epigastric pain. A cardiologist, honestly, finding a good cardiologist, that if you have heart disease in your family, you can do a CT scan in the hospital by walking in for $75, $79, and they can look at the calcium. I know we have a new woman's health program that's starting, and she's working with radiologists to look at the calcium around the breast arteries, taking something that's done every year and asking the radiologist to overread it to look at calcium, and that is great for risk factors for women. Technology is just so good that it's kind of, there's some good ways to find it that won't cost you a whole lot of money.
Now, as far as which hospital you choose to go to, you know, here in Murfreesboro, you've got, I guess, two choices, mm-hmm. Westlawn or St. Thomas Rutherford Hospital on Medical Center Parkway. Does it matter which one you go to?
It really doesn't. If you are concerned about something, both have the same ER physicians that are equipped to take care of you. And if they need you moved to the bigger hospital, they'll do that. So whatever's fast and easy and convenient for you, both of them are equipped to do the same thing. And if you need higher observation, they have 8 beds. And if you need some higher observation, they'll bring you over to the main hospital. I will say, for other things or anything like that, I sent somebody this morning over to the veterans for something that I felt those physicians could take care of. And if it's something bigger, they'll move you over to the brand new, nice, expanded hospital.
It seems like every year we hear new things that are bad for you. And I know for years, I think it was two glasses of red wine were said to be good for you. Then I heard it's not so good for you. So how do you figure out what is good for you and what's not, and who to follow, who not to follow?
Yeah, it can be overwhelming. Data information is always overwhelming. For me and kind of my circle of friends, we do kind of pillars like walking or nutrition. And currently we are working with the, I've started an initiative at the hospital this month and it's called Walk the Block. So I've put out a flyer and any associate, cafeteria worker, housekeeper, nurse, my goal is that they go outside 15 times for the month of February and take a 10 to 15 minute walk outside. Prevention is the easiest first step, and sometimes that springboards other things like drinking more water or eating better, or you can't do all these things at once. So try to find the things that you can control, which is walking outside. It can help with your mental health. It can help with your stress level. And so that's what we're doing as a community within Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford, because if we're going to help people, we also need to help ourselves. And so hopefully this will become like a walking club as we go on. We have a beautiful campus with a sidewalk. So that's what we're doing.
So little things like walking every day, that will make a big difference.
Yeah, increasing your steps, 7,000 to 10,000 steps a day, actually does increase your metabolic rate, helps you kind of lose weight, helps you kind of eat better. It's just on your mind. And then if you have trouble, that will come to the surface. Oh, my knee hurts. I probably need to get that checked out. Or I'm short of breath and I can't walk. But that's why leaning on your primary care doctor or your cardiologist is really the best thing to do.
In a nation filled with obesity, are there certain types of weight gain we need to look out for more so than others? Because I used to hear, well, if the weight is mainly around your belly, that is something you should really watch out for because that's really bad for the heart. But I don't know. Is that still the case?
Yeah, I know I research a lot of women's health, and the abdominal girth size is actually an indicator of cardiovascular risk. And losing weight, you could just measure it. And I know my personal goals, okay, I don't want to count macros. Maybe I can just walk more and try to fine tune my diet and eat a little better. And then you can use the measurement, just an inch. Let's say, hey, I'm going to try to lose an inch in 1 month. It does play in with your whole body health.
So these things really do make a big difference.
They make a difference. It's hard to kind of, I think baby steps, okay, this month I'm going to try to drink this much water, or I'm going to try to hit 7,000 steps 5 times a week. But it takes it being on the front of your mind and writing it down with goals, or sometimes people write it on their bathroom mirror of what you're going to try to accomplish. You have work goals and family goals, and health goals probably should fit in with that.
So when you look at all the different things out there today, everything from, gosh, recreational drug use to alcohol use, alcohol abuse, and then you've got smokers, then you have marijuana smokers. I mean, there are so many check boxes today that you almost have to ask the patient all of these questions to figure out, okay, well, what are some of the things that you're doing in your life that could lead to potentially a heart attack?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, it's really surrounding yourself and having a support group amongst yourself. Finding a primary care, I can't lean on it. Ascension has primary cares that you can lean on to say, hey, I'm overweight. What do I do? I feel like I'm addicted to drugs. Can you help me kind of come off of that? Everybody might have a pattern that they've gone into, but there's always steps to kind of undo that pattern and getting support for whatever that addiction is, or maybe it's stress, or maybe it's anxiety, or maybe it's poor sleep. I mean, there's so many realms that maybe one person struggles with.
So does stress really have that big of an impact on your body?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's hard to know. I think as we age, our ability to process stress is different. I know this is all very personal. I'm not like a stress. I'm a heart surgery nurse practitioner. But the patients that I find, the small percentage is very healthy. They run and they strictly have heart disease in their family. There are percentages that are smokers, which dramatically increase your risk of a cardiovascular event, a stroke, high blood pressure problems, which lead to kidney disease. I would say smoking and nicotine is a very hard on your body. And then weight matters too. And risk factors like diabetes, if you control it versus not control it, those all play in with arteries. And if you are on the right path for improved health or worsening health.
Age. How big of a role does age play in the heart and the condition of the heart?
I mean, age with time, your vessels get a little bit more firm, like less compliant. We call it compliancy. And that's just a natural thing that will happen. We honestly do heart surgery on 80-year-olds. There are some 80-year-olds that still work a farm or some mamas that take care of everybody and never stop. And so their movement alone helps them recover from heart surgery. So yes, age does play in that. It does, but it's not, this is a big thing I feel very strongly of. You aren't feeling well because you're getting older. I mean, age should not just stop you from living your life. And so it's important that we continue to not let age discriminate on how well you're doing in your life.
Interesting. Again, Hallie McNew with us today from St. Thomas. And again, you're a nurse practitioner. When it comes to the different variety of patients you see, because I'm sure they're all over the place as far as age, as far as their background. I mean, there's just so many things to factor in. What about the foods that they eat? As far as, are we eating more processed foods today? And is that group, those who do eat more processed foods, are they in more of a danger zone? Or those who are vegetarians, are they in a more danger? I mean, how do you look at all that stuff?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to these things by nature, probably because I'm in medicine and I've chosen this path. But the Mediterranean diet is a good diet. You can look that one up. That is like healthy fats, but there's also less red meat, more fish, and a lot of vegetables, which adds to your fiber. American Heart Association has a lot of resources. For women, I've kind of looked, and as we age and our hormones change, decreasing the sugar to, I think it's less than, I'm going to get this wrong, but 20 grams of sugar a day, and then increasing your fiber to 25 grams of fiber, which is difficult. If you've ever tried to add that much fiber, it's hard. You sometimes have to add a fiber supplement, but that kind of moves things along in your body, increasing your water, and then your step count. So that's three easy things that we can do, trying to not overcomplicate it. Decreasing your sugar and increasing your fiber, and then whole foods. I think whole foods is always a good choice because that adds the fiber. They're less processed. Your body's not going to hold on to them as much. You're going to fill yourself up better. There's a lot of good things with that.
So less sugar. I haven't heard a lot of people say that. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think less sugar kind of goes with, if you're eating whole foods, you have less sugar. The higher processed foods tend to have more sugar.
And then red meat, I've heard that a lot.
Research is tricky on that. I haven't looked that up recently. I know some people are currently doing, I think, all protein diet. I don't know if you've heard about that recently.
Yes.
So my theory on the whole protein diet is that you are eliminating sugars and processed foods. So that's naturally going to decrease your calorie intake and you're fuller and more sustained. That's you're doing something just a different way to get to the method.
But if we, you know, do more vegetables, more things like that, more fishes, those are obviously positive.
Yeah, those are great changes.
And then obviously less fried foods. That's another one, I'm sure.
Yeah, like for me, I can tell you for breakfast, I'd eat the same breakfast every morning, but it's 3 turkey sausages. Sometimes I'll do orange juice with protein powder in it and shake it because I need to like move and get out of the house. So I need something mobile. The orange juice is probably too sugary. So I've done protein yogurt with mixing in some chia seed or basil seed for fiber. So like these are just little things that I do. And then I try to find like a low sugar dressing and do chicken on a salad. I use the hospital cafeteria. So I try to make choices.
Now, there are so many people out there who just flat out don't do breakfast. And I know that's probably not the best idea, but it's hard for some people to get up and eat in the morning. So if you do skip that breakfast, is that something that's going to be ultimately detrimental to our health in some way, some form?
I think as you age, your metabolic rate decreases. And so if you don't eat enough food, your metabolic rate slows and then you gain weight naturally. So the step count tries to keep your metabolic rate up. I think it's okay depending on where you're at, but then you have a shorter food window and then you need to get a certain amount of fiber and food within that shorter window. So I think it's a little bit of planning. I'm going to bring in my husband right now. He does not eat as many calories as I think he's in trouble, but
that's the majority of us who work.
Yeah, he uses nicotine and I think that suppresses his metabolic rate. But it's hard. So I think the grab-and-go's protein drinks. So there's protein drinks that you can grab-and-go and stock in your fridge. Those have 20 grams of protein. Grab-and-go items, pre-made frozen meals. You can find some frozen meals that have protein and fiber. And you can always add fiber to it or add chicken to it. So there's ways that we can eat processed food better. Like there's a yogurt called Too Good. It's got lower sugar and it has high protein. So it's looking at your labels a little bit.
So if it's hard for you to get everything into your diet each day that you need to, those protein drinks, protein shakes, those really are okay to drink then.
Yeah, it's just setting up your environment. So if you put a mini fridge in here and stocked your 10 protein drinks and just grab them, then you're like, okay, well, at least what I have is higher protein.
You know, it is funny because if it were here right in front of you, then you would remember to eat it. You would eat it or drink it versus you have to go to the grocery store to pick it up. It does mm-hmm. make a difference there. So when it comes to that daily diet, theoretically, it sounds like if you were to eat the proper amount of food three times a day, three meals a day, then you should hopefully lose weight or at least maintain a good weight base as opposed to eating two meals a day.
Yeah, I think sometimes if you're doing all the right steps, hey, I'm walking, I've changed my diet, it takes time. It's not going to happen in 1 month. You have to be patient with yourself. And moving, so if you're doing all that for 5 to 6 months consistently and you say, okay, I have done it consistently. Yes, my stomach has lost an inch. It's working. Or if you haven't, then you could talk to somebody about some options and trying to get improved health. I know I'm going to make a plug, but Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford started a women's HARC program. And you can go in there and it's women specific. And if you've had symptoms and you're having trouble with weight or let's say you have heart disease or there's something called, this is not my specialty, but you can self-refer. They come here on Mondays and you can see them. The heart surgery group, I looked up the numbers and surprisingly, about a third of our patients are women versus men. But, you know, we've done 500 cases in the last 3 years, which I've been meeting with y'all since we started, and we are serving the community, and unfortunately, nobody wants to see us because it is heart surgery, but at least what I think about heart surgery is it's not it is a disease, but we can fix it and give you another 10 years. So we can, if you have valve trouble, valve heart isn't something that you caused. Most of the time, it's genetic. So it's just a finding, and that could be shortness of breath. So a cardiologist or primary care can help people with symptoms.
Now, if you do decide to change your diet and start walking every day, mm-hmm. and let's say that's the minimum you do is change the diet, start walking every day, how long does it typically take for you to start feeling slightly healthier or where you feel like you have a little more energy?
So personally, let's say me, I've gained probably 10 to 15 pounds over the last 4 to 5 months. Christmas happens. 500 calories less a week is a day is 1 pound a week. So that's a safe measure to lose 1 pound a week. Fasting too much actually has detrimental effects. So increasing your steps, watching your diet, you can lose 3 to 4 pounds a month. And then if you're consistent over time, that can be 10 pounds over 2 to 3 months. Now that's working really hard. So if you say, okay, I'm going to do these changes, I would say you'd expect to see changes 3 to 4 months.
Now it's interesting because you did point out how if you don't eat those three meals a day, as opposed to eating three meals a day or either two meals a day and having a protein shake or some type of food, you're going to feel not as good. You're not going to feel as good. And then along those same lines, if you don't, you know, walk every day, if you don't walk every other day. I mean, these small things, these small steps you can take in life really do ultimately play a big role in how you feel and how your health is overall.
Correct. Yeah.
That's interesting.
For me, are you a walker?
I do.
Oh, good. Yeah. What does it do for you?
Well, I don't really know yet. You know, it's like I get on these kicks and I'll do it solid for, 6 months, 4 months, whatever at a time. But I don't really do all the portions that I need to. I don't eat the 3 meals a day at the same time while I'm walking every day. So if I could just get all those things in order to do it all at the same time, I think I would feel 100% better overall.
Yeah. Do you walk alone or do you walk with your family?
I walk with my wife.
Yeah. You know, and that's something else. When we come home, we've got little kids and we'll say, let's go outside. And we live in a spot that the kids could either come or stay. And it's honestly even stress reducing, and it's connecting while you're getting your steps in. So for us, it's become a special moment within our family to get outside and walk together.
Yeah, I think stress reducing is key there, because mm-hmm. it does help you. Just being outside helps you to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the bottom line.
That's right. Winter's hard.
It is. And especially days like this where it's not only cold, but just kind of gray and rainy all day.
Yeah. This winter, I said, I'm going to walk outside. I don't care how cold it is. So I got a jacket and a headlamp. And like I bundled up and I walked, and my neighbor thought I lost my dog. And I was like, no, I'm just walking. And she said, well, you need to get an indoor treadmill. And I was like, I actually enjoy being outside.
Yeah, I couldn't do a treadmill. You know, I bought one years ago thinking I'm going to do this on days it's raining, on days it's cold. I hated it.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about walking indoors.
It feels like a job.
Yeah, it does. Especially when you're not making any, you're just staying still. It's mm-hmm. it's really kind of miserable.
It is.
We're going to take a short break, and then we will be right back to talk more about heart health. Holly McNew is with us today from St. Thomas Rutherford here in town. And again, stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios. Looking for a better internet provider? Try United Communications, part of Middle Tennessee Electric. Visit MTE.com.
When I eat healthy, I can eat at Demas's. When I want to eat unhealthy, I can eat at Demas's. If I'm in the mood for pasta, I go to Demas's. If I want steak, I go there. It does not matter what I'm in the mood for. This is Peter Demas. The only thing we don't have is fried food. So it's very easy when you want to take a group out and there's that veto power person who's like, I don't want this. Well, we usually will have something that they want because we have such variety on our menu. The only thing we don't have is fried food. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Friends? Yes. The financial partners whom you've built a relationship with at Old National Bank are still at the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard location, right here in the borough. And so are the warm, homemade cookies.
Cookies are ready, dear.
Like Grandma used to make. If you need online and mobile banking, Murfreesboro's Old National Bank does that too. You and Old National Bank, better together.
Old National Bank at 2230 Dr. MLK Jr. Boulevard. Old National Bank, member FDIC.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna.
Holly McNew is with us today, and we're talking about the heart and heart health. And speaking of heart health, as far as male versus female, are the numbers similar in heart disease and let's say heart attacks and strokes and all of that? Are the numbers similar for male and female?
The number one cause of death for women is cardiovascular disease, which, I don't know, I'm kind of naive. I thought it was breast cancer, which there's a lot of people that are affected, and their research has come a long way. But heart disease, death, stroke, hypertension crisis, heart attacks actually is the number one killer for women. CPR is actually less likely to be used on a woman versus a man. And I don't know what's behind that. It is a fact that it probably is related to a woman collapses, and maybe there's a politeness that is there with that. I don't want to push on this person's chest. Or now in our community, we have hands-only CPR. Did you know that? Where we're not doing breathing. So let's say it's a man and a woman collapses. Maybe there's some concern that that will be taken the wrong way. But the easiest thing you can do if somebody collapses is call 911. That's something you can control. typically now the American Heart Association has been teaching high schoolers how to do CPR. So I've seen some things in the news where a high school student has, or somebody that's 18 or 19 has put an AED on somebody and saved their life. So that, by the American Heart Association, has come a long way.
Now, it's interesting. So you're saying research shows that if a male collapses in a room and needs CPR, people are going to rush to his aid and perform CPR on him right away, versus if a female had, you know, collapsed in the same room, needed CPR, people will delay in actually going to their aid to help them by giving them CPR. There may be, what, a minute there difference?
I don't have a time, but because of fear of accusations of inappropriate touching, they are less likely to have CPR than men.
I mean, it goes right along with society today. Everybody's scared to say or do anything these days.
Yeah.
That's wild, though, but it actually delays the chances of that woman being saved.
Yeah, this statistic says 39% of women receive CPR by standards in public compared to 45% of men.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Man.
Men's odds of surviving a cardiac event is 23% higher than women.
That's sad.
It is sad. I know. I'm learning all these facts together. And
I think overall, there's probably a delay in that thought process for a lot of people whenever they see somebody pass out. And if it turns out to be a heart attack or something, there's probably just something mentally that says, what do I do? Do I go over there and perform CPR? What if that ends up hurting them worse?
Yeah, I think if somebody collapses, that's the first thing to call 911. You're not going to get in trouble. I think a lot of us, you know, I have a 9-year-old girl and she's always kind of, well, she is a firstborn, so I kind of have to pull her back and say, you don't always have to get involved. But she, you're never going to be wrong by calling 911. Somebody goes down, that's not a normal situation. Now you can watch them for a little second and say they're, you can tell if they're breathing and their eyes are open, but if their eyes are closed and they are limp, you call 911. And it's pretty easy. You get your palms and you go to the center of the chest and you sing the song Staying Alive and you just compress in, up and out, up and down to Singing Alive. So if you're not trained, there's lots of people that can come to your business or teach you, but calling 911, there's AEDs, figuring out where their AEDs are. I bet, I don't know where you have it. The closest one around here is probably the library, but
More than likely, yeah. In the city hall right there. Yeah. But so, knowing your surroundings, mm-hmm. I guess, number one, that is a big lifesaver in itself.
Yeah. I mean, we saw the football player collapse in the middle of national attention, and he had CPR and was shocked, and he came back to life.
It's wild.
It is. It's an easy step. Calling 911 when somebody collapses and knowing how to do CPR is easy.
Women of Impact, a campaign that you were involved with and you received an award for. What is that?
Yeah, so there's about 30 women in the state of Tennessee, and it's a national campaign. St. Thomas nominated me for Woman of Impact, and I would say because I'm in heart surgery, and that's my life mission to kind of help people heal, and here I am with you talking about heart disease, but it is a campaign to raise money for American Heart Association to empower them to get the funds to women are not currently in research as much as they need to be. So that's proven by we continue to have increased cardiovascular deaths from 20 years ago to now. There's not been a great number of changes for that, lowering that death rate. And so this campaign will go to women specifically for research and education.
So it's very important to educate ourselves, to better understand heart disease, to better understand what we can do if somebody needs help. I mean, there's a lot of education, I'm sure, that still needs to be done, and it sounds like you're really helping with that.
Well, thank you. Blood pressure, it's hard. Sometimes you have stressful days and your blood pressure is 180, but my best advice is treat the blood pressures on the stressful days, because overall that's going to help. We need to know your numbers during stress and normally.
And I'm sure there's a lot of things that you can do to bring those blood pressure numbers down with, you know, just naturally without using medicine.
Yeah, a lot of people want to do that. And then in my opinion, it just delays getting to your normal and blood pressure controlled. So get on the medicine and then work on your diet, because that's the quickest fix. You've already passed the point that you've already been past there. So let's just take care of the blood pressure, get it controlled, and then work on your diet.
Now, for a long time, doctors were not prescribing blood pressure medicine. If it were, I don't remember what the numbers used to be, but they've actually gone back to the original numbers, to where they're prescribing medicine sooner as opposed to later?
Yes. So green for go, your normal blood pressure, the top number is less than 120 and the bottom number is less than 80. Elevated is 120 to 130 and less than 80. And so that hits a lot of people. Yeah. You know, high blood pressure is 130 to 139.
Yeah, that definitely hits a whole lot of people these days. Yeah.
And if you're consistently, let's say you take your blood pressure 3 days in a row and those numbers are there, you need to be on medicine.
So head to the doctor. Yeah. And I guess the blood pressure machines that you see in stores and stuff, I don't know how accurate they are, but I guess that's a good starting point just to figure out, you know, hey, this is a little higher than it should be. I need to do something.
It's $20 what we spend that on blow pops coffee, and
a couple of days.
Diet Coke these days. So
if you have a family, you spend that in an hour.
It's fair. So it's an easy thing. Just buy it. Keep it at your house. You're not sure. Just check it. Write it down. And then you can bring those numbers to your primary care doctor. Go ahead and get on medicine so you don't have kidney disease, a stroke, heart disease. Imagine a hose, and then, you know, when you kink it and the pressure of that water gets really high, over time, if you continually did that, the hose would weaken. So that's basically what's happening inside your body with the high blood pressure.
There's like a million things to worry about with your heart and blood pressure.
Well, let's just know you're normal and get on some medicine and move on.
That's right. Well, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Again, Holly McNew with us today. And if anybody has questions, they want to get more information, what's the best thing to do?
You want my cell number?
I wouldn't give that out.
That's fair. I'm just kidding.
Should people make an appointment with their doctor?
Yeah, so you can self-refer to any cardiologist. The women's program, you can self-refer, just say, for the women's cardiologist. And then if you find out you need heart surgery or valve surgery, we do it locally in Murfreesboro. So Dr. Hoffman and Dr. Clements, you can call our office and say you want to get it done locally.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.